On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Nate Shaw, the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. Nate, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Let's see. That's a kind of a broad question, Chris. I've been fortunate enough to be the Arizona Diamondbacks strength and conditioning coordinator at the major league level since 2006. I worked briefly in Tampa for 3 years before that with the Rays. I was the my first year, I was a 2003, I was a athletic trainer in the New York Penn League with the Hudson Valley Renegades, and then I was the strength and conditioning coordinator for two more seasons with Tampa, and then in 06 I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to come to Arizona.
So when we met at winter meetings, you told me you had kind of a unique story and that someday you'd want to be like a motivational speaker type. So kind of go into that story for me. I want to hear the unique story that you have.
Chris, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to share. You know, one of the things that I've learned over the years is that communication is really important, and being able to affect people, you know, making people stronger is very easy and very calculated. You know, you add weight or you do the exercise that you want, and you know, you can get a very controlled outcome from being a strength coach. And there's no doubt why I'm drawn to it, because I can control all the things that go on. And over the years, I've learned that the communication piece is what's missing. And being able to communicate better, I can actually help somebody shift what they're thinking, or maybe transform them into something, or, you know, help them be aware of something that they're not aware or previously weren't aware of. And, you know, it's been really cool. So I think some people think my story, it's my story, it's who I am, so I'm kind of used to it. But a lot of times when I tell people kind of some of the stuff that I've been through, it seems a little bit shocking. So I guess we'll start. I have a intense relationship with coaching. I am a fixer. I've had a very interesting life. I think I got the ability to fix things, to see things the way they are, and be able to intervene or pick an intervention from my childhood. Both my mom and dad were alcoholics at the time growing up, so there was a lot of drinking, and there was a lot of good times in my life. There was a lot of fun, and then there was a lot of times that things got really violent. So when, you know, I'm super fortunate. I've never been abused. I've never been, I've never was the victim of any of the things that I was exposed to, other than just seeing them. So I think at a young age, I learned that, you know, when mom and dad would start drinking, you know, it was actually my mom and her first husband would start drinking. They would, things would get very sensitive, and things would kind of escalate quickly. So, you know, I would always try to like intervene, or, you know, I guess the word now would be, you know, I would just try to like change the subject. Or as a little kid, I would try to, you know, change it and what, you know, because I knew what the outcome was going to be if things didn't go well. So, you know, it was a big domestic violence scene that I kind of grew up in. And it wasn't like that all the time. But when it went south really bad. And it was traumatic in some senses, but it was what I knew. So I wasn't, I don't think that I was necessarily affected by it too much, other than that's why I'm a coach. Like, I can see things that are going to happen. That's why I like the simple things like FMS. That's why I like PRI. That's why I like DNS. I like things that I can identify and evaluate, find something that needs to, that's not right or that's not optimal, and then I can intervene. I can pick an intervention. I can get a guy to stretch his rectus femoris and strengthen his hamstrings so that his hips are in a better place. But it all started when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, high school. And, you know, as I went through, I just started being able to identify things. And, you know, I was mechanically inclined too. But really what it is my personality was very fearful of uncertainty. You know, the first time I ever kind of really felt normal was when I read a book called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And the feeling I would have of like trying to hide from my parents or feeling like I was different from everybody was it was really cool because there were other people that were out there that were like me. And I always felt like I was hiding something. And I was like, ooh, well, there's a lot out there. And so that's when I started to realize that, you know, I learned a lot from my childhood. And, you know, one of the things that I got, like, you can't blame anybody. I mean, if you watch Tony Robbins, it's if you're going to blame somebody, you got to blame them for everything, right? So if I was going to blame my parents for the hard road that I had, I also have to blame them for the wonderful things that I have in my life, like drive, integrity, like telling the truth, being on time, all of those things. Like, if I'm going to blame somebody for it, I got to blame them for everything. So, and if you go to Landmark, it's like communication courses. You take responsibility for things. If you've read the Extreme Ownership book by Jocko Willink, it's about taking ownership, right? So luckily for me, all the good things I have in my life have been the things that I've gotten addicted to. You know, I've gotten addicted to learning. You know, if I go a couple days without reading a book or something like that, man, I feel like the dumbest guy on the planet. It's like, man, I'm lazy, I'm dumb. And it's so far from the truth, but it's an internal emotion that drives. And so I guess all that being said, my mom and dad, my mom's first husband, he was crazy. He was he wound up chasing us out of the house. We moved to Florida. He ended up shooting himself. He died. He chose a small caliber weapon, so it took him 10 days to die. That was kind of more traumatic on my mom because I didn't really like the guy. I didn't have any feelings for him other than that he was a decent person when he wasn't drunk. So, you know, I kind of learned a little bit about work ethic and a little bit about what I want to be when I grow up and a lot about what I don't want to be when I grow up, right? So we fast forward, we move to Florida. She meets another gentleman, great guy, Southern gentleman, awesome. He's the guy that I refer to as my dad. He came to like 3 baseball games. Came to 2 or 3 football games in my high school career. And, you know, I mean, I played football. That was my main thing. And then I played baseball when I was a junior and a senior. I wrestled for just a quick snapshot and a student government. Like, I was involved. And so, you know, when I say he came to 2 or 3 things, that was out of 100 things, you know. So he gave me the best effort, but he was a kind man. And, you know, he had a drinking problem too. And, you know, they were drinking and there was a domestic violence and he was a great guy and he was more tolerant and more, I don't know, just more passive than any other male that she had been around. So when things would go bad, he was never the aggressor. And, we ended up, there was this huge, they were drinking, they got into a fight, gun involved, fight over the gun. Everybody's drunk. My mom was point like 0.36 or 0.23, or he was 0.36 or point like, I mean, like at least 3 times the legal limit. So one of them was 3 times the legal limit. One of them was 4. I don't remember exactly how it broke down, but fight, gun, struggle, gun goes off. He dies. She goes to prison. And in that moment, like I lost everything because I didn't have any real support system other than, you know, my friends and stuff. And so it was traumatic. I was married at the time and, you know, I was just kind of in this place where like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? Cause my dad was gone and my, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with people when they go to prison, but man, it's not like you can just go hang out with them anymore. Like they're not free anymore. And, it was a pretty traumatic experience. And, you know, I was married at the time and it was a traumatic experience for her. And it ultimately wound up being too much for her and you know, me being a go-getter and not knowing myself, not being self-aware. I kind of was a hard charger and it was just too much for her to handle. So she wound up getting a divorce and I went and talked to a mentor of mine and he was like, well, what should I do? And he was like, well, I would get into baseball, you know, because you have a chance to really impact some people. And, you know, I went to school. I had done my internship with him in baseball with the Blue Jays. And it was an awesome. I was like, my pedigree was just perfect because I had worked with this guy at a physical therapy clinic. And my story goes in so many directions, just like everybody, man. And I'm no different from everybody else. I just had a little bit rough, right? And so finally I get a job and I get a job with the Rays. I interviewed with 6 different teams and felt like the Rays were the spot for me to be. And, you know, all the while, my my mom had been in prison. So fast forward like 4 or 5 years since she shot my dad. We were, I was in St. Pete and I hadn't had any contact with her. And lo and behold, she was in a work release program in St. Pete, which was like there had been no contact. So it was purely like coincidental, divine intervention. I mean, whatever you want to call it. And I was like, oh, well, this means I need to patch things up. So, you know, I was holding on to some stuff. I was pretty angry. And, you know, there was a lot of details in the case and all this stuff that I didn't agree with. And you know, I thought there wasn't a lot of integrity going on. And so I was like, all right, man, like, I'm going to say what I need to say. So I said what I needed to say and started patching up that relationship. And, you know, since that time in baseball, I've been able to really dive into things, and a lot of really good things have happened to me in my life. And, you know, I think looking back and reflecting, I had a tough, there are people that have it way harder than me, man. And I don't mean to tell my story and be poor me or anything even remotely like that. But man, I've been through some stuff, and some people haven't, and some people think it's hard, and you know what, it is hard. And what are you going to do about it? Like, no one really, really, really cares about how hard your life is. You know, they compare about results. And so it seems like I've found a really nice home in being able to help people and being able to help athletes and being able to connect with guys. And now, after reading books on leadership and training and all those things, like, I feel like my biggest gift is that I care about people and I can get them to buy into a strength and conditioning program, and that allows me to be a part of their life and be a part of a team and get to go to work every day and have like a meaningful impact. And I think it's been a long road, and I'm still obviously learning, and there's a thousand bajillion more details. And if you have any questions, that would be fine. I'm an open book, and I think, you know, being vulnerable and being able to communicate, I think those are the things that are the most important, and that's the tool that I have that I think is the best.
Yeah, that really is an incredible story. It was not what I was expecting, and you blew me away with it. And it's not necessarily something that I can relate to. Like you said, people have different things that they go through in their lives that make them who they are. And I've gone through my own stuff in my life, and it's that same thing, like you said, is being vulnerable is huge. And if you can present yourself as a person to your athletes, I think it goes so far, instead of just being that, you know, I'm a hard-nosed strength coach, no nonsense. Like, sometimes they have to see that you are a person, and I think that goes a long way with buy-in.
I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. And I think, you know, if someone can see that, man, you're just a regular dude, you know? Like, you know, oh, wow, oh, he's got, man, because everybody's been had their heart broken by now, you know what I mean? Everybody's been in love and been crushed or had something bad happen and had to deal with some real adversity. And, you know, like, when you can relate with some things that are hard that you've shared, I don't know. I think that for me, it makes me closer to the person because we have a connection, you know. And I, ultimately, like, yeah, we got to lift weights to play baseball, you know, because we need to be strong and be healthy and we want to win. And we choose to be a part of this. But, man, it's about being with somebody for the 162 days a year that often gets overlooked.
Yeah, and I think that's so, one of the big values that strength coaches provide is, like, if there's one person on the staff that the players are going to tell those things to and open up to, it's the strength coach, like almost 100% of the time.
Yeah. Well, and we get them at a vulnerable time too, because we get them when they either just punch somebody out or they either got taken deep and got taken out of the game. You know what I mean? Like those are the two, you know, polar ends of the spectrum. You know what I mean? Like, if you're the left-handed specialist and your job is to get the lefty out and you walk them, man, that's bad. Or you give up a bomb, or we lose the game, or, you know, we get raw emotions in the weight room. I mean, as soon as they take their shirt off, and, you know, to be able to empathize with somebody and be able to be there for them sounds so soft and sounds so not sports oriented, but it is about the people and it is about the player and him feeling comfortable. And hey, we got a rebound. You know what I mean? Or if you don't rebound, then your life's going to get even worse when they ship you out of here. So let's minimize the damage and do everything we can, you know, to make it easier for you to repeat being awesome.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And so you've been in baseball quite a long time. And so I'm interested on this one. I want to hear your best professional baseball story, whether it's a success story or a failure story or something that got lost in translation, or you're smiling, so I know something good is coming.
Well, you know, I mean, if you've been around baseball for a while, you've heard some stories too, and been a part of some shenanigans. I would say that shenanigans is a good word. But you know, I was thinking about that when you sent out the questions, and you know, one of them for me is, you know, I've gotten the opportunity to work with some really cool players, like all of us do, you know, and you know, you like to feel like you're a part of something special. And one time I remember we were in this visiting weight room of this particular stadium in L.A. that's up on a hill, and their colors are white and blue, and they're in the National League West. And we were pitching. It was the night before we were going to face their superstar, their big ace. And we're in the weight room, and I was in there, and there was a conversation going on, and our player, I was working on our player. I was doing some flexibility stuff, some soft tissue stuff, and we were there, and he was talking about his approach and how he gets nervous, and he was just being totally vulnerable. Like sometimes he gets a little bit, it speeds up on him, and he doesn't know what to do sometimes. And one of the other guys was like, "Hey, man, what you got to do is you just got to." Our mental skills coach was in there, and he goes, "Yeah, well, why don't you try this?" And there was a lot of listening. This is just a cliff notes. Essentially, he said, "Hey, man, just take a step out of the box, right? Take a deep breath and relax. Can you shut that door? And relax, and then everything will slow down." And so the next morning, we had a day game against the superstar ace. And man, for sure. I mean, I watched it. I was there for the conversation, and you could see that there was some anxiety. And man, he put the bat on his shoulder, took one foot out, took a deep breath, stepped back in, and took him deep, dude. It was the coolest thing I've ever witnessed live. Like when you talk about being able to shift somebody and transform somebody, you know, and our mental skills coach was the best on the planet when it came to connecting, the best listener. And it was really cool to see that happen and see that impact that player, and then see a tangible result the next day, see him do that exact thing, and then see him take him deep. And of course, I mean, it was a big deal for us because we're rivals, and you know what I mean? It's just cool stuff. Like kind of like Babe Ruth pointing to the outfield, "I'm going to hit a home run, kid." And you know, like, but it was just really cool to be a part of the conversation that led to that. And I was a sidecar at best. I was really just present. You know, I was just listening, and it was cool. So that would be probably one moment that I'll always remember for sure.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome story. And it clearly shows how good the mental skills coach is at getting the buy-in, that he told him to do something and immediately the next day he just did it. You know, okay, I fully believe this guy. It's going to work for me. He does it, and then immediate results. Like that's awesome. That's a great story.
Yeah, it was a fun to be a part of, man. And you know, and that's the thing that I'm trying. You know, in general, the reason why I'm so driven is because ultimately I don't think I'm good enough, right? If you look back and you deconstruct everything, everybody has a fear. My fear is of uncertainty, right? The certainty that I'm going to be good enough, right? So I'm always grinding. And so what I want to do is I want my communication game to be as good as that dude's. You know, because I have the opportunity to be there every day, and I have an opportunity to influence 25 guys every day. And, you know, for me to have seen that as, man, maybe I could be better than that. That's possible. But to be at least that good, man, that would be pretty solid. So that's kind of what I'm driving for in all of this self-awareness, is just being able to connect with people the way the good ones do.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm interested in this one. What do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
I think I'm just like everybody else, man. That's a great question. I think initially it was breathing in the diaphragm, man. People used to look at me kind of funny when we were talking about that for a while. We've been fortunate enough to be in a place where we have an awesome budget for Con Ed. And I've been able to go to any course I want to go to, been able to see any guru that I want to see, and super fortunate. And I think the thing that, I don't know, man, with the diaphragm and breathing and just the little corrective exercises, man, those little exercises, they make a big, big, big difference. And, you know, I'd say probably that, man. I kick people out of the weight room all the time. I'm like, man, get out of here, dude. You don't need to lift today. You know, lift there. Let's do this little corrective exercise thing. Do a little soft tissue and get out of here, because that's what you need today. You know, I'm probably the classic guy that doesn't overtrain the guys. That's my biggest thing, is I don't want to overtrain anybody. I want to get the minimum dose possible, the least effective dose, the minimum effective dose is what I'm looking for. And, you know, sometimes you overshoot it, and sometimes you don't. And but that's what I'm always trying to find. So I think that's probably some bit of an anomaly, man. I mean, but we're all kind of sort of doing that. So does that answer the question?
No, yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think the breathing stuff is kind of I've talked to some other people on here, and it's like you're either on one side of the fence or the other. And if you're on the one side, you're bashing the people who do it. And I don't know, man. For me, it's just being open to learning. And I've taken some of the stuff that I've talked to other people about and put it into my own personal training, and it has helped me a ton. So I don't think you can be like, it just doesn't work. Like, I know it may sound crazy to other people, and they probably labeled you as crazy, but it's got to have something to it if it's working.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one of the things that comes up is, man, we're all here to win, right? We're all here to get results. And if, you know, you have confidence in your skill set, and you have confidence in your ability to communicate, and you get something and you can implement it and you get results, then I don't care what you call it. I don't care what you got it, where you got it, how you stole it. I mean, you know, like I was watching Ocean's 11 with Brad Pitt the other night. I had it on my computer, and we were watching it. And the part where he steals the codes out of the breast pocket of the guy that owns the casino that they're robbing. And I was like, man, that is me. I will steal anything, any exercise, any thought process, because I'm not smart enough to come up with any of it, man. But you surround yourself with great people and be open and don't have an ego, then, man, like I'm way ahead of where I was in 2006 because of that mantra.
Yeah, I'm a big believer knowledge comes from either like experiencing something or just stealing it from somebody else. And usually you steal something and then you try it and it becomes your experience. So
yeah, sure.
Steal away, right or wrong, steal away. So what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? I'm sure you've hired a lot of people in your days, and you have a lot of coaches who work underneath you or with you. What do you think in general makes them successful, and then maybe specifically in professional baseball?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. Jeez, dude, huh? You ought to be an interview guy. Wait, maybe. I think the thing that comes, you know, the things that we look for, and, you know, one of the things that I have, and I'm not even the best on my sports medicine team. I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by some guys that are super talented, and they're just gifted people, and they're all twisted, just like me, in a sense that, man, we got to work. And if there's going to be one thing, you know, that I would say you have to have is you have to have some work ethic, and you have to be willing to work your ass off. And, you know, that's something I teach my son. You know, if we're going to do something, you're going to practice. You know, you don't have to do it. But if you're going to attempt whatever it is, if you're going to play football or baseball, or if you're going to try and be a professional baseball player in the major leagues and you want more than a cup of coffee, you're going to need to work your ass off. You're going to need to have work ethic. And then, you know, I think secondarily to that, I think the ability to connect and maybe have a little bit of agility about you, a little bit of a, you know, one of the terms, I'm not sure if it's a real term or not, but one of the ones that we've thrown around is emotional agility. You know, you got to work hard, but you got to be able to shift gears. You got to be able to run a cost benefit analysis on what your plan is for that player today. And you know what? Maybe he hit two triples, and we had a pitcher that gave it up. So that center fielder was on the horse all night long, and you had a heavy leg day planned. You know what? Adjust. You know, what's the most important thing that day for that guy? And, you know, I think the ability to care about people is, you know, to be able to put others' needs before yours, but not from the perspective of I'm a martyr, or, hey, look at me, I'm doing for you, or just, you know, have no ego and just be willing to serve people. And I think if you can do that and work hard and you know, be able to adjust, man, I think those are the key things that I try to look for. And you know, I think those are really important. And I'm trying to build those in my son, you know, and let him be I kind of treat all of our sports medicine team like they're my family, and luckily for me, they've been able to treat me like family, which is pretty cool. So we're just lucky to be super close and hold each other accountable, but we tell the truth, and those are the things that we talk about mostly, I would say.
Yeah, and for me, the work ethic thing is huge, and my dad was the same way. Like, he told me, if you ever wanted anything, you're gonna have to work harder than anybody to get it. And it's something that I've carried with me, and my wife and I, we don't have kids or anything, but even discussions about, hey, in 3 years, if we have kids, like, this is going to be instilled in them. We need to do this. So agree with all of that stuff. And it sounds like you're creating a great environment for your staff to be able to be themselves and make those adjustments on the fly. Because in baseball, obviously, we know there's always adjustments that need to be made.
Yeah. Well, that's the name of the game, isn't it? That's the name of the game. You got to be able to adjust. If you can't do it, I just came across a quote that was, if you don't like change, you're going to like your irrelevance even less. Yeah, man, you better embrace it. It's coming. Change.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. That's a great quote. So what advice do you have for others kind of going along that? Maybe some young coaches who are looking to move up in the field or even older coaches that have been around for a while. What advice do you have for them?
Man, I think, you got to be efficient with your time. The audiobook things, podcasts, those kind of ways of learning. There's so much information, and you have to have some ability. You have to know your product. I think having product knowledge of what we do is non-negotiable. You have to be legit at being strength coach-ish. You got to know anatomy. You got to know the weight room. You got to know how to deal with a pitching coach. You got to know all the things there are. You got to be good with relationships. But I think ultimately, like, the number one thing would be like, hey, if you're a young buck, you got to work your ass off, and you have to be able to build relationships. You have to. It's easy to build relationships if you don't have an ego and you just want to help. What are you here for, man? I'm here to make these players. I'm here to keep these players as strong as they can be, for as long as they can be, so that they can get as many at-bats or as many innings pitched as possible. It's not about you and your program and, how tough, you can make guys. And it's not. Everybody's people, man. Well, someone said it's not about the X's and the O's. It's about the Jimmys and the Joes. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me. You can be the smartest guy on the planet and have the best program, but if everyone thinks you're a schmo, they're not going to listen to you or do your program. You have to have a relationship. You have to be able to communicate.
Yeah, they've been around playing long before we got here, and they will be around playing long after we're gone. So,
yeah, for sure. The game will go on no matter what you do or say.
100%. So you've been mentioning learning and continuing ed. Where are you going for continuing ed? Are there any books you'd recommend or seminars that you've attended that are good, maybe podcasts you've listened to? Where do you go for continuing ed?
Man, I'm a red-blooded American, and I love the United States of America. There's no doubt, man. I love the military stuff. The podcast, I love leadership. I think the U.S. military forces are fantastic. I listen to Jocko Willink for sure. It's probably my number one. I read his books, read all of his books. My kid has read the Warrior Kid books, and he's got a pull-up bar in his room, and so I would say that's probably my mainstay. I love all the stories about leadership, and there's a lot of commonalities between the military and baseball. I mean, obviously the consequences are drastically different and don't even compare. However, there's a lot of things that are the same, and I've gotten a lot of strength from listening to those type of books or stories or whatever. I think PRI has been a wealth of knowledge for me in understanding human function. The DNS stuff has been also fantastic for me. I started way back in the day with Paul Cech. And so I think anatomy and function that you can trust are good ones. And I'd say PRI, DNS, and then, obviously developing your eye, sprint mechanics, swing mechanics, pitching mechanics, that's all part of it. And those places are hard to find. Those things are hard to find good information on, I think, at times, because and still you're a little bit bound by your pitching coach's philosophy or your hitting coach's philosophy. But still, it's important to understand all those, because if you're lucky enough to be around a while, you'll have four or five different philosophies to compare, and I think I've done a good job of that along the way. But as far as seminars go, communication is really important. And I'm sure there's a lot of different places out there. I know Tony Robbins has a pretty cool program, but I've never been through that curriculum. But I've been through the Landmark curriculum. They have four classes. It's an exceptional human communication program where they really help you understand kind of what you do and what you're aware of, and then what you do that you're not aware of. And, you know, they call it blind spots. They have their own vocabulary. And once you begin to understand it, then you can really, really break down some walls. And it's probably one of the things that we've done here over the years is we've done a really good job of embracing that communication. And a lot of our, I think we have 29 sports medicine positions now. Between from the major league director of everything, that head trainer, head strength coach, all the way down to our Dominican liaisons and our programs down there. I think we have 29 positions, and everyone on the U.S. mainland has been to some of the landmark communication courses, and that's been a really good place for us to find some continuity and some conduit that can really bind us together and help us communicate faster and more clear than ever before. So I would say that's a must. Books, man, I just finished a book that is fantastic. It's about the FBI, and this guy's name's Chris Voss. He's the author. It's called Never Split the Difference. It's about he was the FBI lead negotiator for like 21 years. And, you know, he thinks, you know, going into the book, you're like, oh, wow, this is going to be cool. This is going to be like some hard-ass stuff. And the whole book is about empathy and listening and how to listen better and how to communicate better. And it was a little bait and switch for me, but it was fantastic. I just finished that one up on the audiobook, and right now I'm reading David Goggins. He's a mental toughness guru. But I like John Gordon. Being positive, the power of being positive is the power of being on a positive team. And he's got a nice bunch of little fables. The Carpenter. He's a really good author. I'm not all that bright, so I like things that aren't too dense and have a lot of fruit that come out of them. So I think John Gordon is right where I need to be. And, you know, I'll leave Leo Tolstoy and War and Peace for somebody else.
No, there's a ton of good recommendations. And you're the second person I've talked to that has brought up both Landmark and the Never Split the Difference. So I will definitely dig into those. Somebody that I just talked to recently had brought both of those up. So it sounds like two things that I need to dive into. And then, not related, but how old is your son?
He's 8 years old.
And he's got a pull-up bar?
Yeah.
Yes, that's so awesome, man.
You know, the coolest part about it is that I didn't offer it to him. He asked for it. So that's what I'm trying. I'm trying not to force everything down the kid's throat, you know? I think that's leadership, so I'm just trying to be a good leader.
Yeah, I think you can force pull-ups down it a little bit, though. Just the long-term benefit is good for him.
Let's go, kid.
But, hey, man, I'd like to do a lightning round if you still have time for me. What do you got? You got some time?
Yeah, I have no idea what that is, but I'm up for it, man.
All right, it's four questions. The answers can be as long or as short as you'd like. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning? Oh, man, that's pretty cool. Who, like one person? That's a tough one, man. There's so many, I guess is why it's tough. It's not one thing. It's not one person. And I have a sports medicine background. So, that's tough. One person.
I'll give you a pass to name as many as you'd like, 'cause they're all relevant.
Yeah. Well, I think I've learned a lot along the way. I think I got my start with Paul Check out there in Encinitas, California, just talking about functional movement patterns and those kind of things. What a great question. I think a lot of the stuff I've learned has been a combination of moving weight. You know, I had the first book I bought was the Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding with Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. So I throw Arnold on there. That's what started the sickness. I had a coach in high school. His name was Jim Durden, and he was my football coach. He was the type of guy that would want to lift all the time. He was also the weightlifting coach. He would headbutt me with no helmet on, and he would have two gashes right there where the two things were. So, I think it's probably more about health and function for me. So, I mean, I could go down the PRI has been a huge influence. The DNS stuff has been a huge influence. So, you know, you look at the names, the Yandas, the people from the Czech Republic, here in the United States. The PRI guys, you know, it's like there's a lot of influences. So more philosophy, more like umbrellas and bubbles than people, if that makes any sense. And I think, you know, one thing that Mike Boyle said that I had heard before, and, you know, some of the instructors in college, and, you know, Mike Boyle said, don't F them up. And I think that's that's profound right there. Just don't do anything stupid. And, you know, to your point, as far as mentors go, Kevin Barr was a big, big mentor for me. He was the major league strength coach in Tampa Bay when I was there. And when I was in the minor leagues, and you know, that was one of his things, man. It's just, hey, look, just don't make any mistakes. Don't hurt these guys. You know, let them do what they want to do, and sprinkle something. You know, try to steer them away from the bad stuff. But hey, man, just don't hurt anybody. You know, and I think before I became a good strength coach, I just didn't do dumb stuff, and I was already ahead of the curve. You know, so for me, I would have to say, I don't know if that answers your question. That's kind of a skirt the answer.
No, that's
right
fine,
there.
Man. That's fine. The more the merrier, I think. The second one might be a little bit easier. One piece of equipment to train with, what would you choose?
Ooh, man, this was an interview question before I got my job in Tampa. We were sitting there at lunch, and Paul Harker and Ron Porterfield were drilling me. I was some young buck that thought I knew what I was talking about, and they were fortunate enough to see through that and call me out. But when I asked that question, one piece of equipment, man, I would say – my hands and my thought process, kind of so me, without being a selfish jerk, would be the most important thing. My philosophy with soft tissue, I think that's really cool. But if I had to actually buy a piece of equipment, it would be some type of cable system that I could do functional training on.
Okay. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Biggest accomplishment professionally. I don't know if I have a biggest accomplishment professionally. I think probably the thing that I'm most proud of is all the people that are in Major League Baseball that I've been able to be a part of their journey. There's a lot of guys that used to work for the Diamondbacks that are spread out all across the league. And, you know, I don't know if when they were here if I was appreciative enough to their faces, but the gifts that they've given me of being able to be a steward on their course of their ship, of their career, has been a huge accomplishment. So for me, man, like all the people that I used to work with that are now either my direct colleagues, you know, or the guys that are coordinators or the guys that have climbed up, man, it's a really cool opportunity to get to see everybody. Like when we go to winter meetings and stuff, you know, just to see everybody that I've worked with. So that's probably my biggest one. And of course, as a personally, man, it's just being a dad. It's cool, man. You guys, it's a hell of a lot of work, and that's where you get the work ethic part. We gotta work hard, but man, it's easily the most rewarding thing that I've ever been able to do is be a dad.
For sure. Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Oh man, it's a great question. I think, I don't know, if I had the choice, I don't know. I think in the reality of the world, I don't know, man. If I could fantasize and do anything I want, I'd either be Tom Brady or on SEAL Team 6, one of the two. You know what I mean? Like, that seems like a pretty cool mix for me.
Both rock stars in their own kind of their own ways.
Yeah, I just want to be the best. And, you know, I think that, I don't know, I guess, you know, helping people is cool. And it's really growing people and developing people, and it's really cool. And I think ultimately what I'm going to wind up being is really good at that, because I think that's actually a reality. I don't think I can make it on SEAL Team 6. I'm a little too old.
Yeah, and Tom Brady is already Tom Brady, so yeah, I don't think we can have another one.
Yeah, my arm hurts from throwing too many baseballs, so I can't. I don't have that throw gene.
Well, Nate, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you sharing your story and all the things that have gone on in your career and your own personal life. If the listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more from you, where can we go? Are you on social media, or is there a better place?
Man, you know, my social media game is about like the Navy SEALs, man. I am covert. I got a Facebook account. I put up pictures of my kids, so the best way to get a hold of me is probably just nshaw@dbacks.com.
All right, man. Like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll be catching up soon.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Thanks for your time. Thanks for what you're doing, man. This is great. It's a great podcast, and your questions are awesome.
Appreciate it. All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Nate. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was awesome that he was willing to open up and share his personal and professional stories with us. After the episode, Nate reached out to me and said that there was two names that he had forgot to discuss in the episode. And those two are Ron Horuska and James Anderson. He wanted to make sure that he gave them props because they've both been influential in his career. Three things that I took from Nate from this episode: have a great work ethic, be able to adjust on the fly, and be efficient with your time. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.